Morning and welcome to another Scots Way podcast. And today I'm joined by C.D. Boyland to talk about the Glasgow Review of Books, the online journal, which is packed full of reviews, essays, poetry, interviews, translation, and a whole lot more. Hello, C.D.
Hello, Alistair. It's lovely to see you this afternoon.
It's great to see you as well. And can you give us an overview of Glasgow Review of Books?
Yes, the Glasgow Review of Books is, as you mentioned, is an online journal. Its history goes back quite a little while now, I think back as far as 2011. It has been through at least three editorial teams, and I am part of the third. Before we relaunched the journal in July last year, it was run up until COVID happened in 2020. Then for various reasons, some of which were common to a lot of people, the team at that time were unable to take it forward. But I got in touch with them. We had some conversations and agreed that I would find some folk to take over, which we did. And we relaunched at an event at the Old Hairdressers in Glasgow in July of last year. So we've been running it ever since as an online journal that tries to build community around writing and literature, focusing firstly on Glasgow, secondly on the rest of Scotland, and then, because we understand Glasgow as an international city, on the rest of the world. So we try and be there for the most part for people working in slightly more niche areas in writing and book publishing. Our audience isn't the biggest at the minute, although it is growing. But we feel that we're here to help authors, poets, people working in the literary arts who don't necessarily have an obvious platform that they can turn to. Big authors and big publishers will always be able to find space in periodicals and publications, but smaller presses and poets and those working in more specialist areas can struggle, and we're here to try and help with that as much as we can.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing. People often, ask me, oh, why haven't you covered, the latest Douglas Stewart or something like that? I said, well, because he's going to get the coverage and get it there. And you're absolutely right. It's those voices which are in every city and in every town, but, sometimes have difficulty getting out there and heard. And you mentioned you're part of the current editorial team. But what does that actually, in essence, mean? What do you do? Because editor can cover so many things.
Yes. Well, I do quite a lot of the admin work, but we won't talk about that because it's a necessary evil. But essentially what it involves is trying to grow a network of people around the title who are happy to contribute and happy to be part of the Glasgow Review as a project. We're not funded at the minute. We have no source of income, so we're reliant entirely on volunteers, essentially. And the best way of trying to manage that is to try and have as large a network as you can around the publication, so that no small group of people are being asked to carry the weight of the whole thing on their own shoulders. We've been probably about halfway successful with that to date. We've got an increasing number of people who are involved on a more regular basis, and a wider network beyond that who've contributed once or twice, and we hope will contribute more in the future. But fundamentally, it comes back to the idea of building a platform. We want to be accessible to people who have an idea, have a thing that they want to write about, a book that they want to write about. Doesn't mean they have to feel that they need to contribute on a regular basis. If they have something, they can submit it and we'll look at it. But equally, if there are people who want to support us on an ongoing in ongoing ways, we're increasingly kind of building out the number of folk who do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. If people, the best thing people can do is go to the website, because there's so much stuff on there. There's regularly new things for people to return to, and often with anything online, that's the key. To have something new for people to go to, return to again and again. We will go into further details about the website and the review in general, But there is a live event coming up soon, which, I know we want to talk about. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. On Sunday, the 26th of May, in the evening, we are going to Stereo in Renfield Lane in Glasgow, which is one of Glasgow's more famous, kind of more established underground music venues. And we're putting on an event which brings some of the very best poet, spoken word artists in Scotland together with some of the more kind of revolutionary, I feel. Rappers, hip hop artists, also working out of the city. And we're delighted that Darren McGarvey, name that needs no introduction, has agreed to headline that event. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity to do at least two things. One is to platform both kind of hip hop and spoken word poetry as performance arts, as great ways to entertain an audience, to engage and impact on an audience. And it's also an opportunity for people to see how the two kind of bounce off each other because there's so much commonality between these performance genres.
And I think if people perhaps haven't gone to a spoken word evening before, one, this is a great, as you say, Darren McGarvey, but you've also got Texture, you've got other hip hop artists involved, and you've got some of the best spoken word people. But I haven't seen Billy Letford for a while perform, but I know how good he is. And you've got Iona Lee, Imogen Stirling. These are the kind of top level.
Yes, I was delighted that they've all agreed to take part because I genuinely believe it's an extraordinary bill. It's a lineup that people won't see again, I don't imagine, for a long while. And it is exactly as you say. They are, I mean, Billy Letford, I feel, is bordering on a national treasure. He's one of the finest poets working in in Scotland, and I don't think, fully appreciate his talent until you see him read and form live.
Absolutely right. We got him on the podcast many years ago now, when I was in when it was done around the kitchen table, and he performed a couple in front of me, and you're just like, yeah, he is. You're absolutely right. A national treasure is a great way of putting it. And he had a new book out just last year, so it's a chance to kind of hear stuff you may not have heard previously. Similarly, I think Darren McGarvey's got new music coming out, which we may hear. I don't know.
Yes, he's got, I think it's something of a multimedia project, but he is going to be releasing a new album as part of that, and he will be previewing that on the night on the 26th of May. And I think again it's an opportunity perhaps for some of his audience to see him in ways that maybe they hadn't previously. We're becoming more and more familiar with him on our television screens and to some extent in print. But his background is in the hip hop community. It's something I know he deeply cares about, and very, very pleased that he's agreed to take part in this.
And it's going to be hosted by Kevin from Loud Poets, Kevin McLean from Loud Poets, yeah.
Yes, because I wanted to have as little to do on the night as possible. So Kevin, Loud Poets, very, very well known on the spoken word scene. Kevin is a consummate professional host of live events. So I thought if I were able to hand it over to him, then I can just kind of stand at the back of the room and enjoy myself.
Yeah, when you're putting on these nights, that's what you want to do. And it's a fantastic lineup, and it's going to be a cracking night, but it does focus the mind, I think, on the absence of I Write this year. This is the kind of event that they may have had done, previously. And of course, it's not happening this year. And I just wondered what your kind of feelings about that were.
Well, first and foremost, the same as everybody else's, I think, which is that Glasgow is Scotland's largest city. It is arguably the cultural motor that drives much of the arts at some levels in Scotland. Glasgow should have a book festival with international standing, and it's both shocking and disappointing that I Write is not going ahead this year. We had The Glasgow Review of Books had some contact with the organisers of I Write prior to the announcement, and it's no coincidence that we were planning on running this event at the same time as iWrite. I find it quite surprising that we are still standing and to some, and they're not. It feels like a strange reversal of what you think the way of things should be, but that's what it is, and that's where we are.
Yeah, I know that there were a lot of events kind of already in place, and you know, it's great to hear that some of them at least may still be happening on. But it did make me think about the reliance of the arts across the board on funding and how problematic that can be. And is that you've mentioned that there isn't funding at the moment, Glasgow Review of Books. What's your experience of even the process of that? It's a I know from my background, it's a difficult process to say the least.
My experience has been that it has been extremely difficult to find public funding for not just for the Glasgow Review, but for other things that I have been involved in. I don't know a lot about the ins and outs regarding iWrite, but I know some of the things that everybody knows, which is that the event, to an extent, was run out of Glasgow Life. And one of the things I think that concerns me is that it looks a little bit like evidence of a kind of falling between the cracks in what Glasgow Life could support and what Creative Scotland felt able to support, and the festival has suffered as a consequence. And I suppose one of the questions in my mind is, iWrite, for example, as far as I'm aware, doesn't have somebody in a what you would say was called an artistic director role or a director role. It doesn't seem to have a visible kind of public face. We recently been doing some engagement with the Stanza Poetry Festival in St Andrews. We interviewed Ryan Van Winkle, who's the new artistic director of Stanza. So Stanza has a spokesperson, has somebody in their corner to fight for themselves, and other festivals often have people in similar roles. I'm not aware that there was anybody of that sort of stature fighting for iWrite, and it may not have helped that they didn't have that kind of structure, or they didn't have somebody in a kind of public face, a very visible public role to say, this is why this needs to happen.
Yeah, I for whatever the reasons, it's a very sad state of affairs, no doubt about it. For as you say, a city like Glasgow, a very literary city, and Glasgow Review of Books absolutely reflects that, not to have a major book festival. And it does, you know, always frustrates me that you seem to have this political attitude towards the arts at the moment and have for a while, whereas praise is given, oh, we really need the arts and it's really important and all this. And then the actual practicalities of it, such as funding, come right down the pecking order.
Yes, I mean, we try and stay out of political debate as much as possible because
Yeah.
we're a small publication. We could use up a great deal of time and energy if we engaged in that.
I was just talking politics in general. I'm not making any, you know, but it seems to be across the board that that's often the case.
Yes, no, I agree. But I think one of the things that we save ourselves from by not getting too much into that is that we can maintain a focus on just getting the thing done,
Yeah, sure.
which is what we've been able to do so far, and it's what we've been able to do with our event on the 26th of May.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things you've mentioned is that you aim to be as accessible as possible. And I wondered, is being online and kind of proudly online part of that?
It's very much part of it, for two reasons. Well, at least two reasons, maybe three even. One, we're not tied to publication dates, so we don't have the logistical challenges around having to get things together in order to go to a printers, in order to get printed copies out to distributors. We don't have any of that. That means we can be more kind of nimble on our feet if something happens. Last week, we can have content up on the site potentially this week. It means we can tie things in with stuff that happens on in the real world and then and make it part more of a part of people's experience of going to things and seeing things and reading things. Secondly, it means we can be a lot more flexible in terms of how we present our content. We can include video, we can include links, we can do a bunch of different things that print titles can't manage. And it means that we're always here if people have things that they want to write about. Our contact details are up on the site, up on our social channels. If you had an idea before you went to bed tonight and thought that would make a really good review or article, send it into us tomorrow morning and we can have a conversation about that straight away rather than having to wait until the next window opens or the other things that print publications are tied to.
And I think it's also fantastic to have places where long form essays and longer form pieces can live because it's increasingly rare.
Yes, because it doesn't cost us anymore, which is a big help. And one of the things that surprised me slightly since I moved into this role is that I think there's a general preconception, particularly online, that people will only have limited attention spans. They will only read 400 words before they go somewhere else or whatever. Our site analytics show that most of the time, in our case, it's the opposite. People are actually really quite keen to look at longer stuff. If it's, you know, if it interests them, they'll read all the way through. We published an inaugural Robert Burns essay, which was around about 11,000 words on Burns night on the 25th of January. Which I wanted to do because I felt it was important and it was contributing to the Burns scholarship. But I felt we were accepting a degree of risk in that, that people would just not want to engage with something that was that long. And but they did. It became one of the most read articles on our site for a while. So I think there is a real... It goes back to what I was saying a little bit at the beginning, which is that we're trying to give a voice to... writers who would perhaps struggle to have their work reviewed in other places. And the converse of that is that we're trying to engage an audience who perhaps aren't finding this kind of content anywhere else. And if you can do that reasonably well, I think people really do have an appetite to lean into it and to read longer pieces and to enjoy them.
And there's often writers who are looking to write longer pieces as well. And increasingly, that's difficult to do. You've often got people who maybe are coming out of university courses, having studied, and really have a lot to say, you know, about whoever they are interested in. And it's great that there's a kind of a home, because often there's a barrier, perhaps, between the general public and reading academic pieces. But if you've got somewhere where everyone is welcome, going back to that idea of accessibility, then, you know, that's a fantastic thing to have.
Yeah, and we try and find a middle ground across the board between a kind of academic interrogation of writers and writers' books and a kind of general reader way of kind of level of discourse, which I won't claim we've fully succeeded in yet. I think we are getting better at that sort of sweet spot. We don't treat people as though they have to have everything explained to them all of the while. But equally, we're not afraid to be quite obscure at times in what we write about.
Yeah, and part of the thing about having so much content is that there is something for everyone there, really, you know. I mean, there's some fantastic poetry, for instance, that, again, somewhere where it's maybe difficult for people to find a home.
Yeah, and I think one of the great, the most valuable things about our site is it's all there. It's reasonably easy to search through. The site is quite powerful in terms of keyword search, but it's also organized by poetry, by fiction, and in other ways. And if there was one thing that I would encourage people visiting the site to do is just to have a look about, because we've got 13 plus years worth of content on there now, and it's all free. It's not quite, but it's a little bit of a mini library in itself, and growing all the time.
It's a great resource, actually, for people who want to maybe find out more about something, and online resources in Scottish writing, it's still not a huge thing. You know, they're still, constantly evolving.
Yes. And again, we can see when people come onto the site, about half of them generally read the thing that they've come on to read and then go off and look at other things as well, which I'm very pleased about.
Yeah, it's definitely a site you can get lost in, there's no doubt about it, and suddenly find that 2 hours have passed and that you're still reading on different things. And you mentioned, I'm just thinking, it's to some people it'll be a very different way of working. And you kind of mentioned that you're right across social media. And is that side of things increasingly important, getting the word out there, letting people know that you're there? And it's like, but the problem with that is it's a constant thing.
The problem is that it's a constant thing, and again, it's one of the unseen things that takes up a lot of time for the team. All of these things require work, and they require focus and attention. But social media, first and foremost, is a little bit of a necessary evil in 2024. Secondly, if we want to be accessible, we have to accept that people won't automatically hear about us, so we need to find ways of reaching them, and social media is the least worst way of doing that. But thirdly, we want, to an extent, I think, to create a presence for ourselves. So people will see some of our posts on social media, and they might not immediately see something there that they want to click onto or they want to visit, but they will have an impression that we exist and who we are. And hopefully, in time, a week later or a couple of weeks later, they'll see something else and they'll think, ah, now this time, this is something I actually want to engage with. So we do it for those reasons as well. It's a little bit of an investment in our in awareness of our title.
Keeping in the consciousness of people that are interested, but I've seen that once, I've seen it twice. I know that's this, it's all these things that people don't realize have to kind of be ongoing. But following on from that, I was wondering how you feel the landscape of Scottish writing more generally has changed over the last few years, perhaps since you've been involved with Scottish Review of Books and before that. Because every area of the arts, whether it's music, whether it's theatre, I've just done a podcast with for a dance theatre group, the engagement is done in different ways now. And I think that's what you're trying to look at with the Glasgow Review of Books.
No, yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, my specialism is poetry. I came into this as a poet. I published the first collection with an Edinburgh-based press called Blue Diode Books last December, poetry collection called Mephistopheles. So most of my impressions are about how poetry publication has worked since I started getting involved in that world about 6 years ago. And I have to say that there's a disconnect. There's probably a level at which people are broadly perceived to be quite successful. And I could cite Push the Boat Out Poetry Festival in Edinburgh, people like Michael Paterson, people like Billy Letford, as well as the sort of more established, the sort of patron saint of Scottish poetry, of course, Liz Lochhead. So there are a number of names, and I'm talking specifically about poetry, but it's probably true of other genres as well, which kind of exists at or around the level of a general public awareness or consciousness. But then there's quite a big gap, and then there is a sort of not underground level, but there's a kind of grassroots level, which is where I've been living for most of my writing career. But that grassroots level is sometimes really very interesting, very exciting. It's where a lot of the live events live, that go on week by week, which we try and support through the GRB and in other ways. It's where people can often get their first introductions to writing and specifically to poetry. They can go along to an event and they can start thinking, actually, this is something I can do. And it's where some of the more kind of niche and therefore interesting voices often live, which again we've been trying to support through the GRB as much as we can. And the thing that's probably changed in my experience is that that gap in the middle feels as though it's getting emptier and emptier. Because I think, and again, this loops a little bit back to questions around things like public funding. It becomes increasingly harder to live in that middle unless you're able to self-fund or self-support in some ways. You can manage at a grassroots level because you'll usually be doing other things with the majority of your time. Or if you're very, very lucky, you can become one of the few that lives at that kind of top level. But the bit in between is becoming a little bit of a, frankly, a bit of a desert.
That is interesting. I was thinking about the areas which I feel have really improved in recent times in kind of Scottish writing. I'm thinking of spoken word, which we've mentioned, the areas of translation. I think there's more translation happening than ever before. Both Gaelic and Scots language, not just poetry, but writing in general, has really kind of thrived. But often they're relying on independent publishers. And there's been a kind of thriving of independent publishers, but it's so, having spoken to many of them, it's increasingly challenging as well.
Yes, I mean, poetry publishers live in a world where if you manage to sell 150 books, then you've done reasonably well. So all of them, people like Rob McKenzie, who runs Blue Dyad Press, or Duncan Lockerbie, who runs Tapsell Teary, Sheila Wakefield, who almost scaffolds half or more of the Scottish poetry scene on her own through Red Squirrel Press. The reason that they're still around is because they have learned and evolved to adapt to these sorts of this kind of economic climate. And one extent that's a good thing because they carry on doing what they do through good and bad. To another extent, it's not as good a thing because it kind of builds the economic limits into what you do.
That's the economies of it is that's a whole different podcast on its own, but I think it's it is really an interesting idea. And again, it's interesting that it's the Glasgow Review of Books, as you've explained, it goes out from that, it goes nationally and then internationally, which is a really good thing. But I've been reading a lot of interesting Glasgow novels recently, in particular, and I was wondering what you feel about how writing about a place, and let's say Glasgow, because that's what we're talking about, changes attitudes to it, not only for people who live there, but for people from outside as well. Is that something that you believe in?
It's something I believe passionately in, I have to say. I take to heart, I'm probably not going to quote this accurately, so forgive me. But the famous lines from Alistair Gray's Lanark, where Duncan Thorne talks about Glasgow not having a life in the imagination. He said, "No, nobody imagines living here." I'm missing. I haven't got that quite right, but I don't know if it's possible. I don't know how long it would take. But one of the things if I felt that the Glasgow Review of Books was contributing in any way to the city, it would be to make it clearer to people that actually there is an extraordinarily diverse and fascinating imaginary version of this city that exists through its writing. And it's not the one I think that most people think about when they think about writing about Glasgow. If I have one kind of enduring disappointment, it's almost the reflexive way in which when people look at books about Glasgow, they tend to default back to the no mean city kind of stereotype. And there's no arguing that the market for that exists, and as long as there's a market, people will want to produce books for that audience. But there are a huge range of imaginative versions of Glasgow out there in fiction. Point which has obviously been rammed home this year by the Poor Things film and the attendant kind of discussion around the absence of Glasgow from that film.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But there's a great example of a Glasgow novel that absolutely breaks the types of stereotypes. I noticed that you've got a review on the website of Sarah Sheridan's Secrets of Blythewood Square, which I'm just reading myself at the moment, which does exactly that. Goes to places in the city and about a time in the city that is rarely written about. And there are so many examples out there, you know, if people think it's just gritty and grime, you know, Laidlaw, and Laidlaw is a great book, but you know what I mean? That kind of crime fiction thing. There's so much more going on. And I think having a review of books, which allows people to write about those books, is a great thing in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I personally am continuing a little bit of a theme through some of the things that I'm putting forward to be published on Glasgow Review, which are, if you like, Glasgow Underground writing. We published an interview with a young man called Chris Kelso a little while back, and I think I revere Chris. I think he's an absolutely fantastic writer. He's not based in Glasgow itself. He works as a teacher in Ayrshire. And his work isn't to everybody's taste. He lives in a sort of even more twisted kind of Lovecraftian horror, kind of multi-genre type space most of the time. And there's a limited extent sometimes to which even the Glasgow is reflected in his writing. But I think he is, as an author, very reflective of the kinds of strangeness that comes out, that exists in this city, which doesn't always get written or spoken about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I know Ryan O'Connor's The Voids, which I read a couple, does exactly that as well. I mean, there's a Glasgow novel that might surprise people. There's so many we could mention. And do you have any thoughts on the future, not just for Glasgow Review of Books, but Scottish writing kind of more generally? What's your... we talked earlier on about some of the problems, but I'm always hopeful because there's talents there and the people are there. That's how I, you know, step into the world with that.
I am always hopeful for the future. I wouldn't be in the job of running an online journal if I wasn't. I believe that the good will out over time. I think, for example, there is scope for some of the, what some people might think were the stranger, the more kind of sci-fi, horror, speculative, weird fiction sorts of things that are being produced by authors in and around Glasgow to come more to the fore. There's a lot of that already that lives in things like Alistair Gray's work. So I'm confident that rather than always having to look back at people like Alistair, we will be able to look presently or forward to others in time as well. I want to get to do more in some areas as well. We haven't touched a lot on the Gaelic content that the review publishes, but I do want to mention that because I think it's very important. We regularly publish content in Gaelic. We don't translate it because we believe that Gaelic deserves to be written about in Gaelic. And I hope to be able to do more with that and to be able to platform that more. And I want to get more into writing in recognisable Scots. Recognisable is probably a terrible word for an English person to use in that context. But I would like to platform Scots language more. One of the reasons I was so keen to run the hip-hop side of the event on the 26th of May is that I believe passionately Scottish hip-hop is some of the best uses of the Scots language that are out there, but it never gets talked about in that context. You know, you have Scots language awards, you have quite a lot of sort of cultural focus on maintaining and promoting Scots. And people like Darren McGarvey, maybe on the author side of his working life, perhaps get considered in that. But his hip-hop lyrics are some of the best and funniest and liveliest and most energetic Scots vernacular that you'll hear. And I'd like to kind of be able to make points like that more.
Absolutely. It's an area which is thriving, but still is almost underground. So the people that were involved in it, are not just passionate about it, but they're doing it incredibly well. If anyone listening wants, there's a new album by Steg G and Freestyle Master out just now, which is amazing. Unfortunately, I can't play anything on the radio because of the language. But these people, as you say, there's a mastery of what they do because you need that mastery in hip hop. And the event at Stereo will really showcase that as well.
I sincerely hope so. In fact, I know it will.
Yeah. Maybe give people some details again off the night so that it's fresh in their mind.
Thank you. So it is on Sunday, the 26th of May. Tickets are available via our social channels. Links are also available on our site. It's £10 a ticket. I want to stress all of the box office will go directly to the artist. So the Glasgow Review is paying for the venue. The Glasgow Review is paying the cost of putting the night on. The reason for doing that is so we can hand ticket money over directly to the people who are performing. We have three extraordinary poets. We've talked about Billy Letford. We've mentioned Imogen Sterling, who is arguably one of the finest performers on a stage in Scotland at the moment. Iona Lee, who is a slightly different performer, but equally kind of riveting. Iona can hold a room in stillness in a way that you almost wouldn't believe unless you'd experienced it. And so those three will be appearing alongside Texture, alongside Johnny Cypher, who's wonderful human being, but also an extraordinary user of words and language. And then headlining the whole thing will be Darren
Well, a night not to miss, no doubt about it. Just finally, if people have been listening to you and want to get involved or maybe find out about how to submit or contribute, is the best thing to do to go to the website?
The best thing to do is to go to the website. If Failing that, we are on Instagram at Glasgow Rev Books, and we are on Twitter at Glasgow Rev Books. And you can message us via those channels as well. But the website has our full contact details. It's www.glasgowreviewofbooks.com. So it's fairly easy to find. It comes up pretty quickly on Google.
Yeah, and it's where you'll find fantastic reviews and interviews and everything we've been talking about. CD, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, Alistair. It's been a lovely way to spend a Friday afternoon.
And we'll be back soon with someone completely different.